Good evening, everybody. I'd like to welcome you to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, David.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Yep, check. Also, we respectfully ask those present to please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Excuse me. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and to ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we're talking about steps 5, 6, and 7. And I'm going to welcome Mark and Neil, who graciously agreed to come share with us tonight. I'm going to, I swear I'm not here to read you to death, but I'm going to start tonight on page 72. So we talked about step 4 for the last 2 weeks. So we're assuming that we have made our personal inventory. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which, when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we have done well enough at admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. The best reason is first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves, but they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone else all their life story. Mark?
He said I need to talk into the mic.
No, just talk to the back of the room. Mics will pick you up.
They will? Can you all hear me? Okay. I'm trying to, my name's Mark Gilbert, I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is July 4th, 1991. My home group is a Big Book Topic group in Hampton. We meet at 7 o'clock on Friday nights. And then we have a beginner's meeting at Tuesday nights at 8 o'clock. So, all right. I'm trying to unwind a little bit. I got right off of work, went home, showered, got on the motorcycle, and came here. So I'm just like kind of wound up a little bit. But in talking about this, you know, when I share my story, and some of you may have heard when I talked at Big Book in Canton, I talked about telling our whole life story, you know, and the people seem to want to avoid that a lot when they talk about doing the fifth step. And I don't know about you, but when I tell my whole life story, it doesn't leave anything out. Nothing. That means everything. It means the good, the bad, and the ugly. And for many years, I tried to get sober, and I went through a couple of treatment centers in the Navy, and like it said in the book, I got drunk again because I wasn't willing to tell my deep, dark secrets to nobody. I had a counselor when I was in treatment, and he took me into a room, and he sat down with me, and he told me all his deep, dark secrets. I mean, he told me basically his life story, and I mean, all the things, and most everything he told me were all the same things that I had. And I believe the reason he did that is that he knew that I needed to tell somebody those things. And he was hoping that I would do that. But there was no way, absolutely not. I wasn't going to do it. But after a series then it came to a point where I just didn't drink, you know, but I still wasn't willing to do what y'all do. And I was dying. You know, after 5.5 years, the second time of not drinking, I was dying. You know, I wanted to kill myself. I was pulling my hair out. I was coming unglued from the inside out. I thought I was going to spontaneously combust. You know, the whole thing. It was just terrible. But the problem was I couldn't kill myself, and I didn't want to drink. You know, the desire to drink had been lifted from me for whatever reason. And I knew that wasn't the solution. So anyway, I came back into AA, and I got a sponsor, and I became willing to do what was suggested. And I believe the steps are written in order for a reason, and I believe everything we do for a reason. Because when it came time to do that fifth step, after really diligently working the steps prior, I was willing to sit down with my sponsor and tell him everything. My fifth step took 6 hours. He said it was the longest one he'd ever listened to. But anyway, you know, but I just knew that it seemed to me that it was a matter of life and death. I had two choices, one, live by spiritual principles or die an alcoholic death. And I was either willing to do this or not. You know, so I sat down and I told him my whole life story. So, that was, but for me, that was probably one of the biggest things that I did. And, you know, and it made it okay for me to move forward with the rest of the steps of this program. And I'm so grateful for my sponsor. I still have the same sponsor today, and as far as I know, he's never told anybody anything I told him. So, but I really don't care today, because I will tell you if you want to know. Any of my deep, dark secrets, they don't bother me today. They can't hurt me, you know, and I don't care if you know or not. So, and that's really cool. That's all I got. Thanks.
Thanks, Mark. Neil?
My name's Neil. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Neil. Neil.
I'd like to give a shout-out to Courtney. I was talking to Mark's sponsor, and he was telling me when Mark was a little kid. No, just kidding.
I would not be surprised.
You know, when I came in here, I was real fortunate. I came into AA, and I was raised up in AA, surrounded by just these old timers, men and women, whose recovery was really based in faith and love and hope and joy. And so when I walked in the rooms, I heard the laughter. I saw the stuff in their eyes. I saw this light in their eyes. I mean, I hear people frequently now talk about, you know, if I call my sponsor, the line's busy. Although with cell phones, you never have a busy line. But anyway, you know, my only other option is to commit suicide. I never heard people talk about committing suicide. You know, it was like, dang on, there's something here, and it's joyful. And so that's what I came into. And kind of like what Mark was saying, at first I didn't think it was the alcohol, It was the trouble that was the trouble. That was all. It was the problems. It was the law. It was the whatever. It wasn't the drinking. And so, you know, I came in here and tried a program of half measures, and as it says, it availed me nothing, and I kept drinking, but I kept coming. I kept coming back and in and out of the meetings. And I think that's the most important message I can give a newcomer. Whatever you do, just keep coming. And so finally, you know, I don't believe, for me, it's hard to talk about one step without looking at the rest of them. You know, step one, you know, I didn't get it, you know, writing and answering questions. I got it out there by beating the tar out of myself, you know, going again and again, trying not to drink and just doing it again. And just this, y'all know, the horrible stuff we put ourselves through until one day I finally understood, Neil, you can't stop. And your life is a total train wreck. And that was a place of utter despair. I mean, that was a place of utter darkness, you know. Man, I'm doomed to this alcoholic death. This is going to be horrible. But I've been coming here and heard the old timers, and I believe that the old timers, there was people here who could show me how not to drink for a day. The only way they could do it is if I, for once in my life, just did what I was told. And so I did that. I was got to a place where I was willing to surrender, and almost immediately I found some peace. And, you know, I found some comfort. I remember saying, you know, I finally found what I was always looking for through all those years of drinking and drugging. There was always all kinds of drugs in the picture. I just wanted to feel good. I finally found it when I got here, when I got step one and step two and three came. So after a period of time, I started, I've been around here for a while, I'm feeling senses of this joy. I'm hanging out with these people who are just filled with joy and love and faith and hope. And after a little while, I started feeling kind of funky. And just feeling unsettled. And I remember asking my sponsor, I really don't feel, what's, I feel, he said, maybe it's time to do your first fourth step. And so I did. And, you know, I'm real grateful because of that joy that I was surrounded by and this positive atmosphere in these old timers, just like Mark was saying, I was looking forward to, I knew there was stuff I needed to get out. Now, when I looked at the, you know, the way it's laid out in the big book and the columns and the resentments and stuff and, you know, the boss and there, I never had a career. I never had squat. I grew up in a family business. I would quit when I wanted to quit because they just weren't doing things right. But I never, somehow I knew it was me. I knew there was something wrong with me. And so I kind of struggled with that. But, you know, I put out what I had. And I definitely knew there were some things I needed to tell some people. There were secrets that I was harboring that I just knew I need to get these off of me. And so when it came, you know, I wrote the fourth step, and when it came time to sit down with my sponsor, you know, I wanted to do this. I wanted to get this stuff out and move on because I'd seen a glimpse of what we could have or what I could have through this process, through these simple actions. And so I sat down with my sponsor and went through and told my life story. And he didn't throw me out of the house or anything, and we moved on. That's all I got. Thanks.
Thanks. So we're going to continue on page 73. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension. Mm. That makes for more drinking. Mm-hmm. Mark?
Wow. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous the last time, I was full of anger and full of rage. I said that I hated men and I hated women. I couldn't stand the people I worked with. I couldn't stand going to work. I didn't want to be around them people. On and on and on. But when I came back into Alcoholics Anonymous this last time and became willing to do what was suggested, I didn't hate men and I didn't hate women. What I hated was me. You know, and that fear that it talks about, you know, the fear is the root of my anger. You know, if I get angry, I'm fearful, because then if I get angry, I'm just trying to cover up that fear, because you're getting too close and you're going to find out. you're going to find out about something that I did that I shouldn't have done, or something that I should have done that I didn't do, or you're going to find out about my deep, dark secrets that I'm carrying around. You know, and it talks in here about how that just builds up more and more and more, and it just keeps going, because I keep stuffing it, and I keep stuffing it, and I keep stuffing it. It's killing me. You know, it's killing me. Every day it's killing me. And it's a horrible, it's a horrible way to live, you know. And if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, you don't have to live that way anymore if you don't want to. One thing I was, you know, I wanted to say about that, the fifth step is that when I sat down with my sponsor, my sponsor told me a lot of his deep dark secrets right off the bat to help it make it easier, you know, for me to open up to him, you know. So, you know, I had some on him already. So, you know, but I mean, it was just a really, really good thing. And you know, but I, you know, a lot of the stuff it talks about, I can still do the things that it talks about in here today. You know, when I let up on the spiritual program of action and I'm not willing to do these simple, follow these few simple rules that we follow. Because I don't know about you, but I got a disease that wants to kill me on a daily basis. It just does. It's like it doesn't never give up. I mean, it just beats the crap out of me all the time. And, you know, I have a solution, and, you know, I have a reprieve, and if I'm willing to do, you know, what it is that it suggests in here, you know. So that's all. Thanks.
That's fine.
You know, I was thinking about this when I was asked to speak, and one of the things that I really picked up on early on is, you know, the greatest character defect I have is that I've always faced life by myself, the sense of self-sufficiency. And I didn't really realize that's what it was. I just never understood how to have a relationship, or the need, or the simple actions that bring about a relationship with a higher power, and how that can affect, you know, my life or benefit my life. And so I've always done. There's that poem Invictus, the line that it says, I am the master of my fate, the captain of my destiny. And I think now I look back, and that's kind of what I was doing. You know, I can control my life. I know what I need to do. And so I was always at odds with stuff, but it's also this puny little Neil against the whole universe. And so I remember my first day of first grade, walking into the door frame and looking into the classroom and thinking, I'm not like these kids. And it wasn't in a superior sort of way. You know, they all know each other, they all know how to get along, they all dress correctly, and I'm the misfit. And so that fear was there from day one. And when I came in here and worked, you know, the drinking took care of the fear. That was the great thing about when I got drunk the first time at 13 years old. One second I was not drunk, chug-a-lugged a bunch of bourbon. The next instant I was drunk. And I didn't grow up in a drinking family or anything, so but I knew I was drunk, especially when I tried to stand back up. But what I remember most about that was the freedom. Oh my gosh, all those fears were gone. And then alcohol stopped working. And it talks about the tension, the fear and tension we live in. You know, one of the things I forget frequently is, God, I used to hate the telephone. Because I never knew, because I always owed people money. Because just the drinking, like I said, it was also the other stuff that was involved, and it was usually lots of money, and I had to owe people. And so I lived in terror when I came home from work that the phone was going to ring. And I was going to have to, you know, make up some sort of silly conversation on my end while the other person on the other end is talking about coming over here and killing me because I owe him money. gosh, that fear and to, you know, go out on a run and, you know, go out and just mess everything up, destroy my life, and then, you know, try not to think that it happened. And the foxhole prayers. And I meant those fox. Please, dear God, don't let me do this again. Get me out of this one. I will never do that again. And I really wanted to not ever do that again. And so that constant fear. And when I came in here and got that little bit of peace, once again, like I said, that reinforced my willingness to do this stuff and to get these secrets out, because I had a glimpse of the freedom that's here. And uh, And so, like I said, I was willing to sit down with somebody and share my story, and I just knew it would help, and it has so far. Thanks.
We're going to continue on page 75. When we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory, and we are prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do and why we have to do it. He should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approached in this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. Mark?
Yeah, that's pretty awesome stuff. I don't know about you, but I didn't really have to pick somebody like it talks in the book, you know, or, you know, I picked a sponsor and pretty much got told what I was going to do and what I wasn't going to do. And, you know, I mean, pretty much he just kind of laid it out and we started going through the steps and we started going through the process. And, you know, on Saturday night we did the third step on our knees in the church, you know, over at Craddock Study Group. And Sunday night we had a meeting, a big book topic group. He showed up with a yellow pad and a pencil. He called it the magic pencil. He said the magic pencil will appear. He told me that, and it did. You know, and he said, go home and start writing. You know, so, I mean, there was nothing for me to really think about. It was just for me to be willing to do what he suggested, you know, because I truly wanted what he had. I really did. And I knew for me it was a matter of life and death. And my sponsor takes this program very, very seriously, and he will tell you that it's a matter of life and death. He will joke around and he will have fun, but when it comes down, and even to this day, I love him to death because he tells me what I need to hear, not what I want to hear. And he's, you know, and I'm grateful for that because he doesn't let me get away with nothing. He calls me on my crap all the time and tells me straight up what's wrong with me, you know. Whether it's my pride, whether it's whatever, it's one of the seven deadly sins, it's way out of bounds of God and society. So, but it says we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. And that is, for me, an awesome feeling. And when I work with other alcoholics, you know, I get people that get to the fourth step and they start doing a little bit, and they might do sometimes they do what I would say a half-hearted fifth step. I know it's not a sincere fifth step or whatever. And then they stop, and then the next thing you know, they're back drinking, and then they come back. And, you know, well, I can't figure out what I'm doing wrong, and blah, 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 blah. And I truly believe early on, and there's a solution. It talks about, or when it talks about there's a solution, it says, you know, that, you know, we have to do this leveling of our pride, the confession of our shortcoming. We have to do all these things in order to consummate this deal. You know, I mean, so for me to walk a free man, you know, the first thing I got to do is I got to do that fifth step, and then I need to move forward and do more. You know, I need to make amends for the wrongs that I've done. And I need, you know, my sponsor told me I can't keep the money. You know, I gotta do all these things, because I tell people that I sponsor, you will never walk a free man until you're willing to do what we do, until you're willing to do all of these things, and then we'll be willing to continue to do those things. But, I mean, you know, today I walk a free man. I really do. I don't walk around in fear or worry or all that stuff that we talk about. I don't have that today, you know. And it's just, it's awesome. So that's all. Thanks.
Thanks, Mark.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Actually, no, seriously, I love to talk. I love talking to speak at meetings. I love talking in front of a crowd. But sometimes that's the beauty of this book. I mean, like, you're going through this book with a newcomer, and you read something, you know, having read through it for years. I read one of these paragraphs, and it's like, man, you can't, that's it. You can't, it's nothing. Just read that. That's what it is. and I'm reading this paragraph, and you know, I like to say I did this stuff because I'm a virtuous person, or I want to be a virtuous person. Mark just touched on it. I did it because I knew if this doesn't work, I'm dead. If this doesn't work, not that I'm going to commit suicide, this thing is going to kill me. And so I came in here, you know, with a sense of desperation. I found immense joy and freedom and peace. And like this, like the paragraph just says it. I really can't add much to it. You know, when I was done, I knew I could look the world in the eye. You know, I was finally free. And it's just, it's an unbelievable gift. And that's really, I mean, it's just unbelievable. I mean, after years of being sober, I'll still walk out of my house some days, get ready to go to work, walk across my yard, get ready to get in my truck, and I'll just stop and think, I'm free. I can do whatever I want to do today. And it's because of these simple actions outlined in this book. So that chapter, I mean, that paragraph, I mean, it's just, I can't add to it. That's it. Thanks.
Can I add one more thing?
Sure, please.
I'd like to add one more thing about that, too, and it just, I was thinking about it, was a couple weekends ago, I was at the BAC convention up in Waynesboro, and there was a guy there that spoke, and he talked about telling the truth. And he talked about telling the truth in meetings and about telling people, you know, instead of, like, you know, pleasurizing it or whatever, but, you know, just telling people the truth about me or about ourselves. When I was, a few years back, I was going and taking meetings into the jail in Hampton, and I was speaking one night at the meeting at the jail in Hampton, and there was about probably somewhere between 10 and 12 inmates in there. And so I'm sharing, I get about 30 minutes to share my story in a brief way, a general way. And for whatever reason, God inspired me to tell my deep, dark secrets to these guys. I have no clue why. I mean, when it's coming out of my mouth, I'm thinking, what are you freaking doing? You know, these are criminals, man, they're in orange suits, you know, I'm thinking, oh. But what happened in that was the most awesome experience I've ever had in my sobriety. I had every one of those guys come up to me in tears, hug me, tell me they loved me. It was just awesome. I mean, you know, and I think in Alcoholics Anonymous, we don't do that enough. We don't tell people the truth about us, you know, because we're afraid, oh, what will people think? But, you know, I don't know about you. I need to know. And I think if you're an alcoholic like me, you need to know the truth. That's all.
Thanks, Mark. That's going to wind up the paragraphs on step 5. We've got a few more on steps 6 and 7. So we're going to resume on page 75. We've done our fifth step. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page that contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first 5 proposals, we ask if we've omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? Mark?
I remember doing that and, you know, going home and taking that. Well, I didn't have to go home because we did it at my house. So, you know, I did the hour and did that stuff and probably did a little more than an hour. And I didn't feel like I had skimped at all, because when I came here the last time, I was, you know, kind of what Neil touched on, I was dying. And I knew that this was my last ditch effort. You know, it says, you know, and somewhere in our literature it talks about who's willing to do these things, only the dying. And I was dying, you know. I don't know. I don't know about you. You know, that trouble that Neil talked about, yeah, well, I had all kinds of trouble. But, you know, my sponsor always says trouble ain't trouble if we get out of it. You know, and I always got out of it somehow, you know, or it just kind of went away and I forgot about it, whatever the case was, and more trouble came. But I believe, you know, it talks about we thank our God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. I always believed in God. I always went to church. I always, you know, and there was a time in my life when I believed in miracles, and I was, you know, I was going to church. I was baptized. I was just, you know, and I was just in love with that stuff. But I never had a personal relationship with a God of my understanding. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous gave me. And it grows still today. But I've been sober 22 years, and I've been, and out of that 22 years, I got to tell you, I've been pretty darn happy for about 16 years of that, 17 years of that, when I became well and defined and worked these steps. So my sponsor always tells me that, you know, I can, you know, if I do these basic things, like get on my knees in the morning, get on my knees at night, go to meetings, you know, talk to other alcoholics, you know, work with others, he said, I can pretty much guarantee you'll stay sober. He said, but I can't guarantee you'll be happy. You know, so how happy I want to be is up to me. You know, how much I want from this thing is up to me. How much am I willing to do? You know, when I give just a little bit in Alcoholics Anonymous, I get back tenfold. It's amazing how this program works. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing. And when I'm not willing to give, God puts things in my life that makes me willing to give. I mean, you know, it's freaking awesome. That's all. Thanks.
Thanks, Mark. Neil?
You know, early on in in recovery, when I first came around, you know, before I got to these steps here, you know, one of the very first things I was told to do, part of the simple actions, I was told to get on my knees and pray in the morning for the strength to live sober that day. Ask for some knowledge of God's will for that day, and the strength and the willingness to carry it out. And at the end of the day, if I've stayed sober all day, thank God, and they told me to do it on my knees, thank God for another day sober. There was stuff, I was ate up with the phenomenon of craving. I was just eating alive. As soon as my eyes opened in the morning, it was, gotta get something. And I brought it up at a meeting, you know, how do I get rid of this craving? And they told me, you know, we'll pray to have that craving removed. And so I did. And early in recovery, it was taken from. I remember one day I realized, whoa, for the last two or three days, I haven't thought about drinking. And I was floored. So what I'm saying with that is, early on, I started seeing very concrete evidence of a loving, caring, higher power actively working and interacting with my life. I saw, and there's other things, even more amazing than that, physical things that would happen and make me almost like do a double take. And so they might have been miracles, they might have just been a coincidence. I chose to believe they were miraculous. And so I was seeing something happen, something affect my life, an outside force. And so that's encouraged me to be willing to do that fifth step with a sponsor. And like this step said, or this paragraph we just read says, you know, I could thank God from the bottom of my heart. You know, it was just, you know, I could look back on that and we don't do this by ourselves. We don't have to do this by ourselves. You know, even with a sponsor, I can still do this by myself. Like I said, I was surrounded by just this strong group of recovery, and so I got support. And so maybe I have a question. Hey, am I doing this right? Am I mixing the mortar right? And they would tell me, it looks like you're doing all right. It looks to us like you're doing all right. You know, what's your sponsor say? Well, he said, all right, well, then just keep going. And so I knew I had people that cared. And that floored me. And so I could look back on, like this paragraph says, and say, okay, it kind of looks like I'm doing this right so far. That's pretty daggone amazing. Haven't screwed it up yet. But there is a story about that, and that's another night. So anyway, that's all I got on that paragraph.
So we're going to continue on page 76. If we can answer to our satisfaction, we look at step 6. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he take them all, every one? If we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing. Mark?
Wow. It might be hard to talk a little bit about this with 6 without talking about 7 a little bit, but you know, When I work with somebody, 6 and 7 are, I mean, it's 2 paragraphs. It's real simple. That wasn't no big deal. I mean, you know, I mean, there's stuff in here that, you know, like chapter 5, and like a whole freaking bunch of stuff, you know. So that was simple, right? But the truth be known, and it talks about in the 12 and 12, that it's the step that, step 6 is what separates the men from the boys. You know, so it's an ongoing thing. And it's kind of like what I talked about. I got a disease that wants to kill me. I got character defects that rear their ugly head on a regular basis. I got, you know, something about doing this thing right. I don't know anything about doing this thing right. I just know about doing this thing. You know, there's no doing it perfect. If I, you know, and I'm a perfectionist, being an alcoholic, and no matter what, you know, I'm building that, you know, building that foundation and all that. Well, you know, if I can't do it perfect, I don't want to do it. But I don't remember it being like that. I remember it being a matter of life and death and just doing it. You know, so you don't have to do this thing perfect. But, you know, step 6 is instincts gone astray. You know, that's what, you know, and it talks about that. In the 12 and 12 and step 4 in the beginning, it talks about those three God-given instincts. I would tell you what they are, but you can go home and look it up. So, I mean, I could just sit here and read it, and I thought about doing that, but, you know, that's what my sponsor would tell me. Go home and look it up. He'd tell me something's in the 12 and 12, somewhere between page 90 and 150. Of course, I would start on 90, and it would be on 149, you know. So, yeah, he tricked me. But for me, those two steps, and we're going to talk about 7, but those are probably the most ongoing things in my life. And if I want to get better, I got to be willing. And there were some things, and I'll just give you an example. I wasn't going to share this, but I will because I really don't care. When I was early sobriety, my sponsor asked me, he said, do you have pornographic material in your house? Do you look at pornographic material or any of that kind of stuff? And I said, yes, I do. And I had all this stuff that I'd spent lots of money on. And he said, well, you need to get rid of all of it. And I thought, are you freaking crazy? You know, I spent a lot of money on that stuff. You know, all this. So, you know, I got it all together. I took it out of the trash can. I put it in the trash can. And a couple hours later, I went and got it all out of the trash can. I brought it back in the house. And then a couple hours later, I went and I put it back. I did this like 3 times. It's funny. You know, the trash man came somewhere, and I mean, I couldn't go get it again. So it was very difficult. But that was one of the best things that my sponsor ever suggested for me at that time. You know, and some of those things come back, and then they go away, and they come back. And when they came back, I said to my sponsor, did it come back? He said, oh, yeah, it comes back, and then it goes away. But, you know, it talks about in here how we, you know, maybe I don't let go of everything all at once. It's a process, and it in step 6 in the 12 and 12, it talks about that. It's ongoing and ongoing, you know, a little bit at a time. So if we say that prayer, and then everything just doesn't get removed, then we're thinking, well, this doesn't work. Well, if I was perfect, I'd be God. And my sponsor says, I don't want to get perfect, because if I get perfect, I got to get on the bus, and I don't want to get on the bus. I'm not ready. So that's all. Thanks.
Thanks, Mark. Neil?
All right. I'm trying to figure out the getting on the bus thing. But anyway.
Last ride.
Yeah, okay. You know, when a lot of... A lot of the glaring character defects that I struggle with, hang on, my foot's bothering me here. A lot of that stuff was starting to become abated just by trying to live step 3 of my life. You know, I'm not fighting everything all the time. And one of the biggest things I had was the biggest, you know, what I saw as a big, a glaring character defect was my anger. And anger is usually covering up something, hurt or fear. And but I used to, you know, I was either okay or in a rage. And traffic was terrible. I mean, I would, you know, I was one of these people that would jump out, you know, at the next stoplight and go up there and make sure you understand about your heritage and your parents and everything else. And, you know, fortunately, you know, nobody's like Dave size just stopped, got out of the car and beat the tar out of me. And, but just, and I did not like it. I would see myself doing it. I would see myself making a fool of myself and could not stop. And I remember I was on a, so early on, and I don't remember if this was after having done 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 here, these two paragraphs, but I remember I was coming over to a meeting over here in Norfolk, and I was coming into the Midtown, I live in Portsmouth, and I was coming into the Midtown Tunnel, and somebody cut me off, whipped around me and cut me off. And I said, well, they're probably in a bigger hurry than me. And I was like, whoa, where did that come from? I mean, literally, I mean, I was like flabbergasted, like, you know, that's not me. And and I was just, you know, I was excited, like, what? Maybe there's hope. And but, you know, I've said for, you know, for quite some time, you know, I, just like Mark was just saying, you know, a lot of this most glaring stuff. Well, I remember doing this and saying, well, God, if you're willing to do like Samantha and Bewitched and go ding-a-ding-a-ding with your nose and poof, I'm a saint, I'm okay with that. You know, if you want to make me like, you know, Saint Francis or somebody, I'm okay with that. But he hasn't seen fit to do that yet. So it's something I work at. And some of the most glaring stuff was evaded fairly quickly. But stuff comes back. And I remember sharing frequently, you know, how, you know, maybe one day I'll get to where I do this because I want to be a virtuous person. I work on those character defects and ask God to help me with those, and I pray about them, and I do some simple actions to get, you know, to reduce their effect in my life, because I don't like the way they make me feel anymore. I don't like being like that. And some of them still bother me. I'll be perfectly honest with you, and I struggle with lust. You know, it's, you know, and it bothers me. And but I struggle with it, and I pray about it, and I'm doing some meditation on, you know, that aspect of my life. And but I read before we started, you know, it says in, you know, like a lot of groups start with, you know, how it works, and it says we are not saints. You know, we claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. That does not give me license to say, well, I'm doing the best I can. You know, I need to work. I do need to work. And, but I think Mark just said it, you know, the payoff is just way more than any effort I can put into it. And it comes from a, you know, relationship with a loving, caring God. Thank you.
Thank you. I can see myself acting crazy and cannot stop.
That's nice, baby.
Got me?
Huh?
You got me? Page 76. This is the last paragraph of the evening. When ready, we say something like this. Mm. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. We have then completed step 7.
Damn.
Mark?
Pretty simple.
Yeah.
That's simple. That was simple, wasn't it? Cool. Go about my merry way. Life's good. Oh, yeah. No. There's a lot of things I could say about this because it's very important to me, but
feel free.
In 3 minutes.
Yeah.
We have time.
I think one of the most important things my sponsor really drove into my head was that this was a daily reprieve, that this is a daily program, that when I turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him, I just don't do that once. I do that every day. I do it every morning. I say the 7-step prayer every morning. I say many more prayers in the big book every morning. I do these things on a regular basis, whether I want to or not. You know, whether I feel like it or not. Some days I may get up and just get going because I'm in a hurry, but I'm not in the car very long and I'm talking to God and I'm saying my prayers. Because my day starts to get really ugly if I don't do that. You know, and for a long time I didn't quite understand all this stuff. And, you know, it talks about, you know, people, I hear people in meetings share, well, I have all of these character defects, you know. Well, no, you don't. You got 7 of them. 7 deadly sins. It's real simple. I mean, you don't have to beat this thing up. You know, but the hard part about that is that, you know, I have to know what's wrong with me. You know, somewhere in our 12 until it talks about the spiritual action, that whenever I'm disturbed there's something wrong with me no matter what the cause. Doesn't mean you're right and I'm wrong, or that I'm wrong and you're right. All that stuff doesn't matter. The bottom line is, if I'm disturbed, there's something wrong with me, and I freaking hate that. When I first heard that, I said, when my sponsor first told me that, I said, That's the stupidest thing I ever heard. That, you got to show me where that's written, you know. And then I want to know what's an axiom, and I, you know, I'm like going and go home and look it up, you know. I'm like, oh, you know, get a dictionary, you know. So all that stuff, but I have to know what's wrong with me, and that's the hard part, you know. I think it's pride. Well, it's not pride. It's anger. I think it's this, or it's, you know, I think it's sloth, and it's not. It's gluttony, or you know, I, it's all confusing. But so I have to really know how to write about this and work on it, and then talk to my sponsor and run things by him, and you know, and he plays around me until we identify what it is, you know. And I'm always wrong in the beginning, and you know, he helps me identify it. But see, then I can ask God to remove the amount of anger or the amount of pride or whatever it is that's causing me to have a bad day or a bad moment or whatever that is. But if I ain't got it right, guess what? It's not going to happen. It's going to keep rearing its ugly head at me until I figure it out. And that's the whole, this program requires work. I don't know about you, but I got to work. I got to do these things because, man, I'm always, you know, these things are rearing their ugly head. But it also said, I ask him to remove from me those character defects which stand in the way of my usefulness to him and my fellows. So I'm always supposed to be nice and gracious and loving and kind and all that stuff, right? Because, you know, I mean, my character defects won't rear their ugly head because I ask God not to. Well, what I've came to believe is that sometimes my character defects do rear their ugly head. And I don't like when they do. But how are they being helpful? Sometimes when our character defects rear their ugly head, it might not be so helpful to me, but it may be being helpful to somebody else. And sometimes in Alcoholics Anonymous, everybody thinks, well, he's not really human, you know? He's always happy, and he's always looks good, and he's always, you know, all this, and that's not the truth. You know, so, you know, we need to let people know that we're not always okay. You know, and that this isn't, for me, I don't know about you, this is not easy. This requires a lot of constant work and effort, staying sober and staying, not so much staying sober, I don't worry about drinking, but, you know, being happy. I want to be happy, and I want to be joyous, and I want to be free. And I see people that have long, long-term sobriety, and they're just so, so happy. Liz Bailey just spoke in Hampton at the women's conference. I don't know if any of you were there, but I've heard her a couple times. I just love that woman to death. I mean, I want to be like her when I grow up. I mean, she's been through every kind of thing you can absolutely imagine. She's 92 years old. She's 61 years sober. And she's still on fire for Alcoholics Anonymous in life. It's amazing. Amazing. That's all.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
You know, when I first came around here, I was real fortunate. I was in a tremendous amount of pain. I was in the middle of a divorce. When I finally got sober, I was 6 months into a divorce. And I was like, damn, how'd that happen? Wish somebody had told me. And it just hurt bad. Because I started drinking when I was 13, so I'd never dealt with pain, you know, because it got all those adolescent fears and everything were gone. And so that's how I dealt with stuff. And when I came in here, I grew up on a farm. When I came in here, that's one of the things that made me felt like I was different than all the kids I went to school with, because most of them grew up in neighborhoods. The farm was kind of in an area out in Churchland, so it was lots of neighborhoods, and this little farm that we lived on, we were like by ourselves. And when I got into recovery, I lost my best friend, which was the bottle and the drugs. I was in the middle of a divorce, and the bulldozers came and started tearing the farm down and turning it into a neighborhood, the place where I grew up, as a little, you know, all my life. And so I had all these things to deal with. And I remember going to meetings time and time again, especially my home group. My home group's Wednesday in Churchland. And, man, I would just boo-hoo my eyes out. You know, I just saw her with him, and how do you deal with pain without drinking? And I was amazed. These old-timers, men and women, would spend an hour of their life trying to show me how to make it through a day without drinking and how to walk through pain. And so I have felt the hand of God touch my heart in an AA meeting. It's just amazing. So, like I said, I can't change my story. And I have changed my story. I'm someone who's relapsed after some time, and by God's grace, I made it back in here. and I found again this wonderful, wonderful way of living. And so having felt that kind of experience in my home group and in other groups, and when I got to these steps and you know, this prayer, I mean, it just moved me to tears. And I was willing, you know, help me not be such an idiot today. And is there somebody I can help? I never did that kind of stuff. I used to argue with my dad and my uncle. So I grew up in a family business. You know, y'all aren't running the business right. You know, we should be doing it. If it doesn't make money, we shouldn't do it. You don't know. It's money, money, money. Take, take, take. And, you know, they didn't know how to run a business. And they've been doing it for 30-some years, and I just got out of jail. You
know,
But I would never look at that. That really, that's got nothing to do with it. And, you know, when I came in here, and, you know, that stuff changed. I started realizing, Neil, there's so much you can learn, and I want to learn. And this prayer, it just, and so, I pray that prayer, and it's like, I just feel this loving hand touch my heart. I know I'm okay. Even with my character defects, like Mark was saying, to come back and get me, and I still act like a fool sometimes. And God says, that's all right, come on. And I'll share this, and I'll shut up. And maybe. And you know, so I just feel this strong. If you're new, I'm telling you, you can find a way of life here beyond your wildest dreams. That's what I was told when I got here. Old Tom Hearn out in Suffolk used to say that all the time. I guarantee it. You can find a way of life here that you can't even imagine. Wonderfully, wonderful life. And after finishing this step and reading that, I don't know if it wasn't that exact night, but you know, after that's become a part of my life, I remember I was walking down my lane. The farm lane still existed, and there was still some woods and trees there. And I remember I'd walk down the lane, because sometimes I'd catch ride. I didn't like riding to meetings by myself, because I'm in dangerous company by myself. I'm the only person that's ever tried to kill me. Mm-hmm. And so I would meet whoever was going to give me a ride. I'd meet him at the end of the lane. And it'd give me time to walk down, you know, nighttime, you know, early evening, time to go to a meeting. I'd be reviewing my day in my head, walking down the lane, talking to God. And I remember very well, I'd be thinking, shoot, I got a friend that says I can talk about a baked potato long enough and I'll start to cry. But this stuff moves my heart. I'd be walking down that lane. I'd be thanking God for one more day sober, you know, one less day of pain from the divorce. I don't know when it's going to be over, but I know I made it through another day. And I'd be talking to God, reviewing my day, and invariably, there was this little grove of tall pine trees on the lane. As I'd walk through those trees, the wind would go through whisper through the pine trees. Gosh, knows. Just that soft whisper of the wind through the pine trees, and I knew it was God walking in the lane with me, telling me it's going to be okay. You are on the right path. Just keep walking. What a wonderful way to live. So if you're new, stick with us. Stick with us. This is just an amazing life. That's all I got. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you both so much. That's all the time for sharing that we have. Could I turn over to a home group member the finding of the basket that I don't see up here? And when we find the basket, we're going to pass it in accordance with the seventh tradition, which states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any announcements for the good of AA?
My name is Lisa. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Lisa.
There's flyers over there. Saturday morning, brunch in Virginia Beach is having their 25th celebration. Just start of the meeting. It's going to be, like I said, October 5th. It's at 9 o'clock. We're going to have breakfast. And then 9:30 to 10:45, we'll have two speakers. We'll read a little history about the group. So we'd love for people to come out.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Shelley. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Shelley. Shelley.
The Churchland group is having an anniversary meeting on this Wednesday at 8 o'clock on Cedar Road in Portsmouth. And Leanne will be celebrating it for 14 years, and the speaker will be Neil. So please come and join us. There will be cake.
But this Wednesday?
This Wednesday.
This Wednesday in Churchland, in the back row?
Or did someone just announce Churchland?
Yeah.
Same
announcement.
Okay. Jesse.
I'm Jesse Alcoholic.
Hi, Jesse.
Downtown Young and Sober is having a workshop Saturday, September 21st. It's a pancake breakfast. You can get bacon and pancakes and bacon. And coming down from Pennsylvania, I think. So if you need any more information, see me. Also, Biscuit Pod's coming to Virginia Beach. If you're interested in getting into any service work or helping out with the committee, also send me after the meeting.
Thank you. Graham, you want to do the October?
Sure. On October the 25th and 26th, that's a Friday night and a Saturday during the day. It's not this church, it's again United Methodist Church. There's an orange flyer over there. The home group's putting on a workshop. It's called Sober Living. And Bob Darrell is coming from Las Vegas. And the workshop's on Friday night. He'll be telling a story. And then he'll be doing four meetings back to back with a potluck lunch in the middle on the Saturday. The event's completely free. There's no registration fee. There's no charge for the event. And the flyers are over on the table there, and everybody's welcome. And that's on October the 25th.
And on that same day, October 26th, Saturday, when you're all done with that, if you ain't got anything going on, you can come over to Hampton to the Big Book Topic Group, because we're having a Halloween party with a DJ and a costume party and all of that stuff. And we're going to have a good old time. We're decorating the basement. We're gonna scare you. So, anyway. And our theme is, we're not a grim lot.
Mark, tell the nice people about the Wakefield Campfire.
Oh, yeah, Wakefield Campfire Conference is coming up. I assume everybody's probably heard that so much they get tired of it. I start announcing it as soon as it's over the year before. But anyway, Wakefield Campfire Conference last weekend of September 29th, whatever, 30th, I don't know what the dates are. But anyway, the last weekend. And it's $60 for the whole weekend. That includes your staying in a dorm or camping or whatever it is you choose to do. We feed you all weekend, home-cooked meals. It's just fabulous. And we have workshops. We have an Al-Anon speaker, two AA speakers. We have ice cream social. We have a fire that burns Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Meetings around the fire.
Red ball.
It just goes and goes. I mean, it's a very spiritual experience. If you haven't experienced it, you might want to try it. You'll either love it or you'll absolutely hate it.
It usually rains.
Nothing in between. So I've been going since 1997. It's our 20th anniversary this year, so we're kind of celebrating extra big time this year. So free coffee cups to everybody that comes, and we have a big cake and all kinds of extra things going on. So it's going to be exciting, rain or shine. And we're thinking it might be snowing the way the weather's going.
Bring your guitar and a folding chair.
Yeah.
How do you register for the campfire?
See Mark after the meeting.
Yeah.
Anybody else? The Simple Actions Group is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hand. And just to welcome you by first name, is there anybody in the room tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety? Can we just get your first name?
Welcome. That's awesome.
Anybody else?
My name's Trey, and I am
an alcoholic. Hi, Trey.
Trey.
Welcome. Anybody else? If you're shy, tell somebody after the meeting. There's literature available over there on the table. If you can fold it, it's free. Some of the things that were announced, there's flyers over there as well. If you need a book, please don't leave here without one. One of the home group members can help you with that. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor please raise their hand? In closing, I'd like to thank all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at that Mexican place, the Plaza del Sol on 22nd and Colonial.
Awesome.
22nd and Colonial.
Awesome.
So be there, be square. Do we have anybody who's inspired to read the last Evan?
Evan, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Evan.
Hey, Evan.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize that we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you could do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand him. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely to what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Amen. Thank you. Shall we close?
Yeah. Let's do it.
Woohoo!
Thank you so much. That was great.
They do.
It's gonna work.
It'll work.
It will work.
It works. We're working.
Trey, would you lead us?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen. Huh.